Hello everybody, we are back from quite a long weekend away. It's now time for episode 20 of the Centre Circle podcast, and rejoining David and I on our noble quest to bring you absolute drivel about football and Football Manager is Gareth Townsend, finally back.
It's been a long, long break.
The ligaments kind of kept you out for a wee while there, but it's good to have you back, fighting fit.
Thank you.
And of course, my partner in crime, as always, is David Nealon.
As always here, because I have no life.
And on the other end of the Celtic connection, in Glasgow's West End, you have me, Darren Kerrigan, and I am the one who is hosting tonight. And we'll get right into it with our opening discussion, because England is the centre of the football world and the best league in the world, and they are the best at
best
football.
Best league in the world is questionable.
You didn't let me finish with my over-the-top statements, but nice of you to take the bait there. But because Ingerland is the best at everything to do with involving kicking a football, England are off the mark, but did it go according to plan under Allardyce, or are England still in the shitter?
I don't think so. I think Allardyce is playing a cautious approach. I don't think he's changing the system too much from what had happened in Euro 2016. I think he's just taking baby steps, trying to analyse the situation. And I'd say we'll see more of his style grow onto them. But I mean, they were dominant throughout the game, and that's always the case with England. They dominate games, but they never close games out or never finish their chances. And finishing has been a real issue for the England camp lately. And I mean, I could go into the whole issue about how Harry Kane was isolated for the majority of the match, and whether or not he was he's just a very bipolar player. Sometimes he's good, sometimes he just never turns up. I don't know what it is, he's just very inconsistent.
For me, I think England are far from where they want to be and are still a bad team with delusions of grandeur.
They're in a state of decline at the moment. They need a resurgence to try and get them back into the rhythm. And like one of the things that you don't see are more English players who are moving abroad to European leagues. The only
only you'd said that in 5 minutes' time.
I know, but if only there were more. One of the 23 players from the England camp played outside of England. Now, whether or not that's the whole English league declining, or they're just afraid to move on, but I think England would improve if they had a bit more of a variety out in the European leagues.
Okay. I mean, my opinion on Sam Allardyce was well documented when he got the job, and that hasn't changed. I mean, if you compare the statistics of the game against Slovakia to the game against Iceland, they're pretty much similar. More or less exactly the same. So, you know, England are in a position where we're going to definitely win that group, potentially do it unbeaten again. And then we'll go to the World Cup in 2 years' time. There'll be all this buzz around it, good new players will have come through, you know, Marcus Rashford will be 20, 21 by then, you know, if he's carried on this form, there'll be even more hype around him, he'll be like the new Dele Alli, and there'll be enormous expectation, we'll go into the World Cup and we'll cock it up. My opinions on Sam Allardyce haven't changed, and, you know, I'm not convinced that it will be anything more than a sort of coasting qualification. Too much media hype and then a collapse again in the World Cup. It's just the same 2 year cycle every time.
I think you're just too quick to judge Allardyce. It's only been one game. It's a rebuilding job.
To be fair though, before he even got the job, Gaz didn't like him and thought he was a bad choice. So
like I said,
this is him going with his assessment of him rather than judging him based off.
No, I agree, but I'm just saying Allardyce's managerial skills will rub off on the English players. In time, they will.
Yeah, but look at Roy Hodgson's managerial skills before he got the job. He got Fulham to a European Championship final. You know, you know, Steve McLaren had been a success before he got the England job. Anyone that gets the England job, Fabio Capello as well, anyone who gets that England job is just the same person, essentially an FA yes man that will just go in, do what the FA want. How concerning is it that he goes, well, it's not up to me to decide where Wayne Rooney plays? Well, yeah, it is. You're the manager, for goodness sake.
Well, I do agree with that. It was a very bad statement to come out with, and I think Rooney was one of the reasons why there was no supply to that final third. He just plays far too deep. And
he did. You have
to question what Rooney's role in the England team is as captain. I mean, he's trying to be as complete a player as possible, but I still think midfield is not the area he's suited to. And saying that he can play in any position he wants gives him the creative freedom to do that. I think he should stay where he is at England's number 10, where he was originally given that position. That's why he's got the most international caps for England. Why are you repositioning him?
I just don't think he should be in the squad.
But can we discuss the stamping incident? What a horrific stamp that was.
Oh yeah, Skrtel.
I think Skrtel should be banned for at least 10-12 matches. Outrageous stamp.
You know, there was a lot of terrible moments in the World Cup qualifiers so far. You had Podolski elbow and chokehold, and the kicks that he was getting all that game. You've got the second red card in the Scotland game. It seems like there was one incident in every game that was shocking.
Well, we saw Lewandowski's chokehold on the Kazakhstan player almost breaking his nose.
Yeah, that's what I said.
So you said Podolski, but...
I say Podolski?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I meant Levan.
What is with the temperament in... after just one game of the World Cup qualifiers? But Skrtel is just a right scumbag. And I thought he was going to break Harry Kane's ankle in two. It was an outrageous stamp.
It was shocking.
Very vicious. Very, very vicious. And I just don't think he should be a footballer. It's crazy how he gets away with that. Now, obviously, he didn't get away with the red card, but I think there should be more to it.
Was that a red card or was it a second yellow?
No, it was definitely a red card. It would be worth two red cards if needed.
No, I know, but what did the referee give?
Well, like, Skrtel was already on a yellow card, so...
Yeah, but that's irrelevant, because if it's a second yellow, it's a one-match ban. If it's a straight red, it's a three.
A lot of times they do a second yellow just because it's easier to put in the book, apparently.
No, but that shouldn't have been a second yellow.
It should have been a straight red, but I don't know what was given.
It was going to be a straight red regardless.
When you watch it back... you never saw the referee show the yellow card. You only saw the referee show red, but you don't know. But the commentators were saying it was a second yellow, but you never saw that yellow card go up. So I don't know what Skrtel's been banned for.
No, I think FIFA will look into this, and there will be an extended ban to it.
Should be a three-match ban.
I think it should be more than that.
Yeah, but they won't ban it for more than that, because otherwise, if they ban it for what use, they'd be out for the first two games of the World Cup as well.
Well, there were some improvements in the England team. I thought Lallana played well. Dele Alli, when he came on, he provided a bit of spark. And I think even Raheem Sterling improved slightly. Very slightly. I think he's become a little bit better since Euro 2016. And of course, we could at least talk about Joe Hart anyway, being England's number one again. But I think that was just because Forster was out through injury.
I think Joe Hart is England's number one. And I guess he will be for a considerable time.
Joe Hart should never be England's number one. He's not good enough for international football. And
ridiculous statement to make.
Nah.
Fraser Foster is a much better keeper anyway.
No, but they're both about a similar standard. But then Joe Hart's got the experience, which
Joe Hart is not. He has experience, but he still fucks up constantly.
Yeah. So does every other player. I mean, every other goalkeeper would do that.
Constantly.
It's not constant. It was just one bad tournament.
Did you never watch Fabian Barthez play football?
I did watch Fabian Barthez play football a lot. He was absolutely insane. But he could cover his own arse when he made a mistake. Joe Hart doesn't.
Well, that's your opinion.
I don't know. I just think he's England's best goalkeeper. And I think moving abroad will do him the world of good, because more England players should go abroad.
Well, like, that's what I was discussing about. You know, all the English players are based out in England. Nobody is attempting to go to Ligue 1, La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga.
Thing is, previously, there was a risk of them losing their starting spot if they moved abroad. I don't know, I think if they moved to Ligue 1, then they'd lose their international spot. But if Jordan Henderson went and played for a mid-table Serie A team, which is essentially what he does in England, he wouldn't get in the England squad.
I still struggle to see why he isn't in the England squad regardless of that.
So do I. He's never really hit form for England at all.
He's bang average. He's not really international standard.
But moving on from the head and shoulders man. Transfer deadline day. Luiz to Chelsea, Sissoko to Spurs, Boney to Stoke, Wilshere to Bournemouth, Slimani to Leicester. Good buys or panic buys? Just go through each one and say good or panic.
Well, the Luiz transfer is obviously a panic buy. I mean, if Chelsea wouldn't have loaned out 30 or 40 different players, maybe they would have more options in defence. I mean, they have some interesting talents that they have in the defensive line, like Kalas, Miazga from, who did they sign him from? With the American guy, Christiansen, Baba Rahman, Nathan Ake. You know, these players do get first team football in the top flight.
Nathan Ake is not a defensive player.
Nathan Ake?
Yeah.
But he is a defensive player.
No, he's not.
He plays a left back.
He shouldn't.
But like, looking at their defensive line, I mean, they're aging. You have John Terry who's still there for some reason. You now have David Luiz coming back in. You have Kurt
Zouma. David Luiz is a good footballer.
He's not a good footballer.
He has
a bit of a temper, and he has good free kicks. That's all it is, really.
No, come on.
Ivanovic, again, aging. Alonso is all right. Kurt Zouma is injured. I mean, where are all the defenders?
How long is Kurt Zouma injured for?
He was out for 7 to 8 months originally. I don't know when he's due back.
He got injured in that game against Man United, didn't he? Which was what?
It was about 8 or 9 months, I'd say.
Should be back by the end of the year.
But yeah, it's just lack of defensive options for Chelsea. And I think Conte needs to realise that. And buying David Luiz is not the answer, especially for £34 million.
They made a £16 million profit on that sale.
You can buy plenty of other defenders for half and a quarter of that amount.
I feel like your opinion on David Luiz is going to be changed. But I think he's
just like you and Allardyce. So
yeah, exactly. That's fine. But I think he's a good defender, and he's a bit rash, and his decision making is sometimes quite poor. And he likes to sort of push forward, leaving gaps at the back. But they're going to have N'Golo Kante in that holding midfield role, who can drop back and cover for him if he, you know, makes a mistake or gets caught out of position, which is exactly what David Luiz needs. So I think that with him and Kante in the team, it will make up for the gaps in Luiz's game. So it was a good signing, I think.
I think Chelsea should have pursued the signing of John Stones, but he would have been a much better option.
John Stones had as many holes in his game as well.
You can shape John Stones a little bit better, though. He has plenty of talent left. Whereas David Luiz is in decline.
But does Conte want to play the same passing game that Guardiola wants? And if you're a ball-playing defender, would you make the move and go and play with Conte, or would you go and play with Guardiola, who's probably suits your style of play better? I think the best move for Stones was to Guardiola.
Well, that's your opinion. But I think probably the best signing out of the lot of them would be Boney to Stoke. I think Stoke lacks so many striking options.
I actually think Sissoko is going to have a good time at Spurs.
Not worth £30 million.
Oh, he's not worth £30 million.
£30 million for Moussa Sissoko just shows how crazy the world of football has become.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you point to a single English Premiership transfer deal that was the price you'd think is about average?
Henrik Mkhitaryan for £25 million.
Debatable. Zlatan Ibrahimovic for free.
Let's just that's a brilliant bargain. But like, just consider this for a minute. Go back 5 years, £25 million. Like that's four players of the quality. Still can't say his name.
Mkhitaryan.
Yeah, that's four players of his quality for £25 million. Even 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh come on. In 2010, no, you're not going to get five players of that quality. No. In 2010, Dimitar Berbatov cost £30 million.
And at the time, he was far above.
No, he wasn't.
He was. He had good days, but sometimes he was a little bit slack.
Henrik Mkhitaryan's season last season in the Bundesliga was outstanding. The only reason we've got him for that price is because he wants to leave and Dortmund wanted to sell him this season before his contract ran out next year. That's the only reason we've got him for that price, otherwise he'd have been in the 40s.
I mean, if you go back 20 years, 25 years, you had players like Alan Shearer, Thierry Henry, Dennis Bergkamp, all worth under £10 million. It was a bountiful time, wasn't it? But I mean, it's just the inflation of football now has led to staggering amounts of money being spent on ridiculous players. I mean, how is David Luiz worth £34 million? How is Sissoko worth £30 million?
He probably is worth £34 million when you consider he was worth £50 million 2 seasons ago.
That was that was brilliant business. But
yeah,
you re-sign a player you've sold? I mean, it's just the Chelsea way. It was the same with Matic. It was the same with Mourinho. They just can't seem to hold out and, you know, let them fly. They have to bring them back in. It was like Drogba as well. I mean, seriously, Chelsea need to get a grip.
Great.
I don't know much about Slimani, though. I think that's a bit of a stab in the dark to me. Will he adapt to the Premier League, especially with a club like Leicester City?
He's linked up with Mahrez before. So him and Mahrez have got experience of playing together, which could be key.
If Wilshere stays fit, he might be a good move as well, but I still think Boney will adapt to the Stoke style of play and he will get a lot more goals than he did in Man City. I think that's where he suits most, a mid-table club who have nothing really to lose or to play for. I think Boney will get Stoke firing because they don't really have many striking options. They have, again, more aging players like Peter Crouch, Jonathan Walters. Juf has been kind of a bit absent, and Arnautovic. So it's not really.
But when you look at some of the Stoke players, if you look at Arnautovic, now Bonny, who else they get? No, it was Palace, they got Remy, sorry. Arnautovic, Shaqiri, Boyan, and Afellay. They've got a really good attacking lineup there. Their problem.
But they don't. They're not really out and out strikers, though. They need the proper poacher who needs to fire the goals for Stoke.
That's what I'm saying. With now adding Bonny into that mix, they've got a really strong attacking lineup.
This has been a 20-minute intro now, so I'm going to move us along to the Football Manager talk, and we'll start with our man of the match for this week. And Gazza has brought statistics and imperial evidence for his.
I wish I could say I bought statistics, but for some reason Football Manager's not loading up. Tom Youngs is my player of the week. I got him on a free when I was in League 2 with Shrewsbury, and he had an outstanding season in League 2, had an outstanding season in League 1, was a top goal scorer through the course of the season. I think he scored 32, 35, one of them two. In the league, and had two fantastic seasons considering I got him on a free. I'm done happy with that, and he's continued that form into my third season as well. So Tom Jones, it was a difficult call between him and Jack Stacey. Jack Stacey, I've only had him on loan from Reading, but he now 3 seasons in, I've had him on loan each season. His contract runs out at the end of this year, so I hope I can get him on a permanent. It was difficult to go between the two. Jack Stacey's played really well coming in from the right. He's popped in with goals, assists. He's played really well every single game. Probably a higher average rating than Tom Youngs, but Youngs has scored more goals, so that's why Youngs is my player of the week.
Yep. For me, I've actually went for Felix Pasalak, who I purchased for $35 million. I believe I got him from Arsenal, where he was unhappy. And since then, he's been an absolute gift to me, because my two right-back wonder kids were release clause this season. So he's came in, he's got 2 years on the eldest person who left. And sadly, I can't use him in Europe, which is biting me in the arse right now. But yeah, he's been absolutely great. He's pulling in 7.9. or 8 on average and getting a good number of assists. He is learning English, so once he learns English fluently, it's going to go. His performance is just going to go through the roof. And, David, I kind of want to see how you pronounce your one.
Well, it's not too bad. This guy is probably one of my favourite regens that I've had on the save so far. I signed him from Atromitos from Greece on a loan deal with my club Lincoln Red Imps in Gibraltar. Iulios Doukakis, he's a Greek left winger, and he was outstanding for the first year-long loan, so much so that I had to get him in for a second season. But he was absolutely brilliant for the time he was there. He got 14 goals, 13 assists, and 5 Man of the Match awards in 33 games. Blistering pace on that left hand side. He has great acceleration and pace, and yeah, I mean, he can play either one of two roles. He could play as the winger, getting the crosses into our lone striker, or just cutting inside and like get the goals for us. And he proved to be quite the utility man for us, nabbing all those goals and helping us to the title. And he was also voted the Gibraltarian Player of the Year. He also got in the Team of the Year and got the Under-19 Player of the Year. So he's had a successful stint at Lincoln Red Imps. And yeah, he signed up for a second spell. But I have since left Lincoln, so it was my gift to them. And hopefully they'll make it permanent. So yeah, he's been a treasured Man of the Match for me this week.
And I think that's our Man of the Match is all out the way. We'll just carry on right into Save Scout, and I've actually went with a team that I watched play on Sunday, and that is Adrianians. And I was just looking at it, and it's like they've got the potential to be anything you want there. They've got a couple of imports in their squad at the start. They've got a couple of Scottish based players, a few academy graduates, and a few kind of veteran players from like who were kind of in their prime in like 2003, 2004. You know, it's interesting, just blank slate almost.
Airdrie used to be quite good, didn't they?
And then once they, I think they got relegated twice, and then they merged with someone. I looked this up. I knew this a while ago as well, because I used to do work in their stadium.
Didn't they make a... Maybe I've got this wrong. Did they make a Scottish Cup final?
And they lost did at to Celtic. One point. Yeah. Wikipedia. I should know this. I know this information, but yeah, I think they'd be an interesting save just because they...
I think the club just liquidated and then reformed as Adrianians.
I'm sure they merged with like a lower league team though at the same time.
I think it was just with the original Adrianians.
Yeah, it says that they liquidated, but I know for a fact they merged, because the reason they have the stadium and the place they do is because it was bang on in between the two grounds.
Do they not just ground share?
No, they don't. Excelsior is their stadium. I'm going to find this out, goddammit, I'll need to. But anyway, continuing with the show, what's your safe scout, David?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. This is more for FM 17 once it comes out in a few weeks. Cardiff Metropolitan University. I believe they're one of the only university sides who have been promoted to a top flight in any league. They've had three promotions in the last 4 years. I believe they were also in the Welsh Premier League when they were called UWIC Inter Cardiff. But it's great to see potentially taking a university side and, you know, playing semi-professional football, so much so if you try and get them into the Champions League, where maybe they have, I don't know, they're studying on the Tuesday and then have a Champions League match the next day. It's great to just believe that a university side could make it into the Champions League. So yeah, they are my save scout for this week.
Do you know that if on that players leave after 3 years? Because that could be an interesting way of adapting that save. If you have to, after every 3 years, get rid of all the guys that, you know, if you sign all your guys onto 3-year contracts, and then once them 3 years are up, get rid of them all, as though it would be a proper university.
It would be good, yeah. But you also get mature students too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what their transfer policy would be. Could be an interesting one though for FM17.
And moving from the university challenge, couldn't resist. Going on to the headliner. My headliner was managing to win 4-3 in aggregate against Porto, despite injuries and the fact that two of my new signings are unregistered. Sorry, ineligible rather than unregistered. Forcing me to field a shoddy back line, and I've missed my top scorer, Christian Pavon, who is my captain and top assist, and my greatest playmaker. All of them were missing, so I had to field the most patchwork team across both legs, and I managed to beat them to make it to the semi-final, so I'm quite happy with that. And sadly, the draw has not been kind to me, though. But I'll let you guys continue.
Well, I'd say I'll continue with the European run, because I had a very, very close spell to try and get into the Europa League group stages. We started out in the Champions League. This is with my club, Lincoln Red Imps in Gibraltar. We won the league, so we qualified for the Champions League, qualified for the first qualifying phase. We took on Faetano from San Marino, defeated them 4-1 on aggregate. Then I had to play one of my former clubs, Flora Tallinn from Estonia. You know, Jamie Vardy's not there anymore, but we beat them 1-0 in the home and away leg, so we qualified for the third qualifying phase. And I think that was the first ever side from Gibraltar to do that. So we were on the cusp of trying to get to the group stages, but we lost out to Maccabi Tel Aviv in the third qualifying phase. However, there was a possibility we could have gone into the Europa League group stages if we had won the playoff. But we drew Rayo Vallecano from Spain in the Europa League playoff. And putting this in perspective, their most valuable player is £15 million. The most valuable player we have is £50,000. And we actually got an away goal in Spain. We brought the game back to 2-1. However, I was a little bit greedy and went attacking to try and grab the second and the equaliser, but we got caught on the break and we lost 3-1. And the second leg, we had a red card within half an hour, and then we were dumped out 3-0 and lost 6-1 on aggregate. So we were very unlucky not to get to the Europa League group stages, but from a team from Gibraltar, that's not too bad.
Okay, I'll jump in next. Unfortunately, Europe is a long way off for my team at the moment. My headliner is our record-breaking League One season, where not only did we'd only been promoted the year before, so nothing was expected other than to stay up, but we won the league, and in the process set records for the most points. Previous record was 103, and I believe we got 112. I think. And we also set record for the most goals scored. I think the previous record was 111 and we scored 128. So we smashed League One after being promoted from League Two. That was my second season in charge of Shrewsbury, and I'm now into my third in the Championship.
Nice. Yep. So, sounds like the English Lower League seem to be being kind to you right now. You see Leeds' success, and then Huddersfield, well, you are now?
Shrewsbury.
Shrewsbury.
Leeds was a success in the Championship. However, when we got to the Premier League, it then all turned to shit.
The FL 72 just seems to be your level.
It does. Seems to be, oh, great, found my level. No, I think, like I said in our group chat, if we get promoted from the Championship, it would be a ridiculously tough challenge to stay up. But financially for the club, it'd be incredible. Our turnover for the whole of last year was £9 million. And obviously the new TV money would mean we would have a 900% increase on our turnover just from the TV deal alone, let alone all the cuts from the, you know, all the cuts from ticket sales and TV, you know, and any other merchandise or anything like that that would come from being in the Premier League. We're selling out our stadium in the Championship. It's only 9,875 seater, and we're selling out in the Championship. So, you know, if we got into the big time, it would be a financial windfall for us.
Yeah, speaking of finances, the prize money from the Champions League and Europa League were actually very helpful. I mean, we managed to get £600,000 in prize money, which doesn't sound a lot, but for a team from Gibraltar where all 22 teams from Gibraltar play in the same stadium.
They all play in the Victoria Stadium, don't they?
Yeah. And I mean, I don't really know where the proceeds go for ticket sales or gate receipts, but it's very, very low. And for a team from Gibraltar to get that kind of money is an absolute godsend.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Lincoln Red Imps should be making this money year in, year out. But with me, we were about 300,000 in debt, so I mean, it completely wiped it clear. So they have me to thank for that.
Yep.
Nice. And,
Darren has been very quiet today.
I am really out of it. I'm sorry. I'm trying. So my week in review is pretty much, I've been trying to progress despite the vultures of Juventus and Arsenal sweeping in and taking all of my wonder kids, and pretty much I got like six release clauses triggered in the same week. Two right backs, a left back, a centre back, and Carlos Vela. So yeah, that's a lot of losses to my squad. And on deadline day, I managed to replace a right back and a centre back, because it showed up that they'd only been in the under-20s, so I was like, okay, I should be able to play them in Europe. You know, that's good replacements, all of them quality. Paid a bit much money. Yeah, scout reports didn't tell me they would be ineligible for Europe, so, yeah, patchwork squad. Managed to make it past Porto in the quarterfinals somehow, and now I've got Juventus in the draw, where two of my favourite regens that I've had in this game, Erdal and Goncalo Guedes, now play their football after both of them have been released caused from me. One, Erdal by Juventus, and Guedes by Arsenal, where he rotted before Juventus stole him. So yeah, I'm going to get hammered.
It's going to be the case of the Manchester United crash dump again.
No, it's not. I'm going to lose. It's not even going to be a case of me winning and then having to go back and play it. I'm just going to lose.
Juventus aren't actually that great in my save. Inter Milan are the new dominant force in Italy.
Nah, Juventus are going to win the Champions League in my save this year, I think.
Oh, it's because Diego Simeone now manages Inter.
Praise be, Simeone.
Conte is still at Juventus in my save. Strange. This is 2030 we're talking about.
That's impressive that he's been there for a while. But I suppose because he probably wins the league every season, doesn't he? So
I think AC Milan won it. Let me just check. Juventus have won quite a lot.
Milan won it. I thought you said Inter Milan were the dominant.
No. AC Milan won it in 2017 and 2018. Then Juventus went on the next 10 years, and now Inter Milan have won the last two, 2028 and 2029.
God, can you imagine the part? that 10-year streak got broken. Just imagine that, like, one team winning for 10-plus years and then...
Yeah, it reminds me of a certain Scottish team, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Once Rangers bombard the party on Saturday.
I really don't see that happening. I am never usually one to be confident.
Well, you didn't see Lincoln Red Imps beating Celtic in Europe.
No, but every Old Firm, I'm usually the naysayer, and I don't like Old Firms. I feel like anything can happen. This time, I feel like it's a Celtic win.
Can I just remind you what happened in the last Old Firm derby?
Yes, you can, because I predicted it.
Didn't you? You lost.
Yeah, I predicted it.
I think it's hilarious that the Old Firm and the Manchester derby take place at the same time, but half an hour earlier.
Yeah, David, you guys must be happy about the referee choice.
Yeah, because only people can only take in half an hour of Scottish football before they have to change the channel.
I am actually. I'm genuinely happy that Mark Clattenburg's refereeing it. He's the best referee in England. So,
for Manchester United games, yes. From your point of view.
I think the game would have been won anyway with Aguero's suspension.
I wouldn't say that. It makes it easier, how Aguero being suspended. But yeah, I think I'm chuffed with Clattenburg. He's a good referee. So, yeah, pretty much we smashed it in League One. Romped to the League and Cup double. We won the Johnson's Paint Trophy as well, beating Swindon at Wembley. I said quite a lot of this in my headliner, but then obviously we've just been promoted. I'm not sure where we're up to. I think our next game could be QPR, because I dropped my laptop last night and it switched off after playing QPR and Wolves, picking up 4 points from there. So we were, when I dropped my laptop, fourth, I think. Yeah, we were fourth. So we're in the playoff spots. So hopefully, yeah, we can carry on this form. I think we're 12 games in, so not quite. We're about a third of the way in, quarter of a third of the way in. So, you know, hopefully we can carry on this form. I mean, the target is obviously 50 points. If we can achieve that, we can stay up. But if we can scrape sixth, then, which is what I did with Leeds my first season, finish sixth, then we can hopefully have a good run at the playoffs and have a shout at the Premier League, which is ridiculous to go from League 2 to the Premier League in 3 years, but we've got a real good chance of doing it, I think. Made some really good additions to the squad. And, yeah, I'm confident we can stay up. I'm feeling a bit like Claudio Ranieri, but that's always got to be the aim, is just to stay up and secure our position.
So it's your year.
Nope, it was our year last year when we dominated League One.
Dave? You match the mighty Shrewsbury?
Well, I mean, I have got 15 trophies in the cabinet already, but yeah, I added three more with Lincoln Gibraltar. When I started out, I'll backtrack a little bit because we haven't done a show in like 3 weeks. I got sacked from Dudelang in Luxembourg. Didn't really end well because Folaesh and Unisesh were dominating the league. So I downgraded a little bit. So I went down to Andorra, where I managed Lusitans, and we won the league. We did, however, lose the cup finals by the same team, FC Santa Coloma, where we were both 1-0 up and then losing 2-1 in the second half, which was quite annoying. But we won the league by 6 points. Left there, went to Lincoln Red Imps. And before you say Lincoln Red Imps are an easy side to get a trophy at, they haven't won the title in 4 years because Europa have been the new team who've dominated. And they are very tough to break down. I only defeated them once in my entire save. We lost in the cup final to them by 2-0. We won the Gibraltarian Premier Cup. We beat Europa Point, not the same club. We won by 3-0. We won the league quite comfortably in the end. We won by 7 points. And to cap it all off, we won the Pepe Reyes Cup, 2-1. So I left with 3 trophies, and now I'm managing in Lithuania. I've taken over Atalantas. So we'll see where the journey ends next.
Nice.
I think it's now 15 years I've done this save.
That's impressive. In-game. I mean, I'm into the 2019-2020 season, so you're a long way ahead of me.
Hi, I'm back.
Yep.
Didn't even know you'd gone.
Ah, that's nice.
I mean, it would have been better if you weren't here, but I guess we'll have to deal with it.
So friendly.
So we're just on to the closing discussion now.
Yep, and that is what features you're wanting in the new FM to be released on November 4th, as is tradition.
One thing I've noticed recently, I've been looking at attendances and things with Shrewsbury, and occasionally we'll be maybe 90 or 100 down on a maximum capacity. So I think one small thing I'd like to see is being able to get a breakdown in your attendances of home and away fans. So, for example, whether we're 90 seats down on a sellout, if we've sold all our home end but haven't sold the away end, then them figures can be encouraging to look at in terms of a stadium expansion. So what I want, we can't afford it at the moment, but on my current save, want to expand the stadium. But if the club come back and say, well, we're not actually selling it out, even though we're selling out the home end, not the away end, then that could be that's just something small, but I think would be a really nice touch to be able to look at. Another thing I'd like to see improved is the match engine with the goalkeepers. Their reactions seem to be quite poor. I'm sure you've noticed it when there's a shot, your goalkeeper makes the save, and then it takes about
4 years for them to stand up.
For them to get up, and then, or even if they stand up, they don't then get down and make the double save. So that's something slightly more, slightly bigger that I'd like to see improved. But then the two things.
On the other end of the match engine, fucking cutbacks.
Cutbacks.
So many times the shots from ridiculous angles. Like,
professional. Well, I mean, cross-come shots are kind of.
I know, but
physic,
you know,
fails,
exactly.
But they,
you know,
do happen, but just they happen more often than any other thing. But it's mainly crosses that have been the main Achilles heel.
Yeah, but you're not getting what I'm talking about. When people shoot from ridiculous angles, when there's a cutback and a player standing in the penalty spot.
Definitely. They never seem to take the easy pass. They always seem to do ridiculous things.
Yep.
I haven't really experienced that too much.
How many hours do you have in the game?
Me?
Yeah.
About,
it's like a ridiculously common thing.
But you wouldn't see this in like lower scale leagues. I mean, I've managed in Gibraltar and Andorra and Luxembourg and, you know, these kind of nations that don't really have high quality football.
Yeah.
Who are willing to, attempt those chances. It's all about walking the ball in.
Yeah, if anything, that's the level that people would be making stupid decisions like shooting from, like, impossible angles. But, and the other thing is, I saw a joke post about how you can edit kits and all that, and I'm like, you know, I would actually like that.
It would be quite nice. I mean, it would be a very sort of, I'm not sure something they'd ever add, because it's something that could take time away from the match engine or something, but yeah, it'd be quite nice. Or if they did things like have a new kit for an anniversary year, or the logo changed slightly for an anniversary year, things like that would be quite cool. But
logos you wouldn't really have since they're licensed by the clubs, but I'd say kit changes might be interesting.
It was only a joke post at the thing was, but
I take that on board. I think it will be very interesting.
I don't think it'd happen, but it'd be something interesting to see.
Like, I've nothing really more to add apart from, has training been mentioned?
No.
Yeah, I think training really needs a revamp. It's too basic.
I've got to say, I don't really do a lot with training. I generally leave it to my assistant.
Yeah, but I think it's far too basic. I mean, you have, what, ball control, attacking. You need to be a bit more detailed about it. You need to see how your player develops. And I mean, if you're going to stick, or how your team is developing, whether they're going to be competent in, you know, attacking or a certain area, like finishing or set pieces or, you know, something part of that, or defending. I really think there needs to be more of an element to that. I think it's too basic.
True, but if you make it too complicated, whereby you get to the point where, unless you spend ages getting your training system set up, then it's impossible to get good results. It will then sort of mean that a lot of people won't have the time to play the game properly. So
now, how about this? How about this? Depending on your training facilities, you have more or less options on how specialist your training could be.
You could do that, or you could do it based on the sort of quantity of coaches you've got. If you've got more coaches, you can break things down further. If you've only got, say, 4 first team coaches, then you can only do attacking, defending, and stuff like that. But if you've got, say, 12, then you could break that attacking down into shape, and, you know, what to do when you've got the ball, what to do when you get into the final third, and things like that. Yeah, that could be a good idea. Sort of break it down depending on your training facilities or the amount of coaches you've got. I like that idea actually.
And the other aspect which I've constantly wanted in FM is more realistic weather, because I mean, you saw the previous week where there was complete downpour in matches. I'd like to see games getting abandoned or called off, or more matches being postponed in the winter months. And that doesn't really happen realistically in many leagues.
No.
Like, I mean, in the Icelandic leagues where I had in FM 14 and 15, you were playing in minus 10 degrees, and realistically you wouldn't be doing that on a frozen pitch, depending on your soil type. But even in Scotland, you'd be playing in snowy conditions. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the only stadiums I think that can be cleared pretty much are Hamilton, Kilmarnock, Celtic Park, depending on how long the undersoil heating's been on, and I don't know, does Ibrox have undersoil heating? I'm not sure on that one.
I'm pretty sure Ibrox would.
Yeah, but what I'd really like to see in-game, you'd have an absolute downpour of rain, and then suddenly the pitch becomes less and less playable, and the referee will have to call it off at some stage.
But
maybe that could be a bit too realistic.
That sounds like quite complicated to implement. But then there's all these things we're suggesting. Are they things we'd rather implement, or would we rather get things like the goalkeeping, you know, things in the match engine sorted out? I think we can come up with loads of things that we'd like to see in the game, but then it's a case of prioritising things, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I sort of agree with what you're saying, yeah.
I think, FM16, I feel, has been like the optimum level of Football Manager. Getting to that stage where you can't really think of new features to implement into the game, because everything is just so up-to-date and realistic that there's not really anything else you could add into it, if you get me. Like, finances are broken down brilliantly. You have agent fees, contract offers.
Yep.
You know, all the details that go into it is incredible, and I think we need to give credit to that. That we've gotten this game that's so realistic. It's so difficult to upgrade. It's at the optimum level.
Yep, I'm going to call it here before I actually pass out. Don't know what the hell's afflicting me, but I'm really getting dizzy.
Well, I guess he's not coming back, so I guess I'm going to call it out here. So, Gaz, do you have anything to plug before we leave?
Nope.
Well, you can find me on Facebook, facebook.com. You can search my page, facebook.com/DBSC16. And also my blog, Sorted Out SI, and search for Climbing Jacob's Ladder. and Twitter. You can also find the show at Center Circle Pod on Twitter. You can leave us tweets, you can leave us questions, feedback, or whatever else. So, with that, I guess there's nothing else to say but goodbye.